Welcome. I'm Anthony Patch, and this is Pulse. This is a geopolitical event, and I would like to place it in the context of NATO. I would like to read to you a statement that was made a few days ago, coming out of the NATO summit that was hosted in Washington, D.C. on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday of this week. And now looking at the statement I'm about to share with you, in hindsight, given yesterday's events, again, I think it speaks volumes. I am not speaking from a conspiratorial perspective, but sharing with you rather the perspective of those in NATO that may be in opposition to Donald Trump's re-election and his past and present statements with regard to his position for NATO's existence and continued existence and the role that the United States may or may not play under his presidency, should he be elected. So I'd like to share with you some source material related to a statement that I, in hindsight, find, well, I'll put it politely, quite inappropriate. This is from CNBC. It is dated Wednesday, July 10th of this year. The author of this article is Holly Elliott. I'd like to read to you some of her reporting. This is NATO. Analysts at the Eurasia Group said they expected NATO leaders to take steps to ring fence, in other words, encircle, ring fence the coordination of the coalition's aid spending for Ukraine in a bid to protect it from a possible future Trump administration. Now I'm quoting here. In a key step to Trump-proof Ukraine aid, NATO will take over substantial parts of the various coordinating efforts for Ukraine aid from the US. This is a statement from the analysts at Eurasia Group. These analysts made this statement on Tuesday of this past week, and flagging that such a step would make it harder but not impossible for a possible future Trump administration to thwart support efforts. Describing uncertainties around the U.S. presidential election and the prospect of Trump's return to the White House as a, quote, shadow has, it should read here, they miswrote this, has a cast a shadow over the NATO summit, the analysts said that, quote, concerns about President Joe Biden's staying power will fuel early stage and informal discussions among several allies on two key issues. One, whether the West has a winning strategy for Ukraine, and two, the question of nuclear deterrence in Europe in the face of a potentially diminished U.S. presence. Now, I won't read any further from this. Again, this is from CNBC. You can go there yourself, take a look at it. It is dated, again, Tuesday, the 10th. Actually, the article is dated Wednesday, the 10th of July, and it is entitled, As NATO Meets, Leaders Look to, quote, Trump-proof the military alliance. Now, I'm not speaking from a conspiratorial perspective in sharing this statement of Trump-proofing. This is, I think, strictly a financial consideration, an aid consideration on the part of the Eurasia Group, and I think they're reflecting the sentiment of many of the NATO member nations. There is great concern. And I want to segue backwards just a little bit to my previous Pulse video, in which I was speaking about nuclear deterrence, the nuclear treaties, the sense of necessity on the part of Putin and Moscow and their military to establish by way of Ukraine a buffer zone, a safety zone, in which they desire, Russia desires, that Ukraine as a state, as a political state, as a nation state, acquire a status of neutrality with respect to NATO, that they are not, as NATO has said in their meeting, this summit this past week, that it is inevitable, their word, that Ukraine, at some point in the near future, will gain NATO membership. This is a direct threat, at least perceived from the Russian Federation perspective, a direct threat to the sovereignty and territorial security of Russia itself by Ukraine taking on NATO membership, because it allows NATO forces to be deployed into NATO and missile installations. The nuclear deterrence is in question, according to this statement, that NATO needs to be Trump-proofed, because NATO views any diminished capacity, participation, funding, armament, any reduction in that by a potential Trump administration as a threat to nuclear deterrence. It takes us back historically to the whole theory, the whole discussion of MAD, mutually assured destruction. That still persists today, that mindset, that desire to match a perceived enemy in the West, in NATO, the US, this would be, of course, Russia, China, and South Korea, predominantly, and potentially Iran in the near future, should they go nuclear. Therefore, this deterrence, as I observe what is going on and read the statements, is that the threat of nuclear war is used as an excuse, as a cover story, an excuse to bring NATO into Ukraine. It isn't so much that NATO desires to use tactical nukes or strategic nukes, nuclear weapons, ICBMs, from the United States, continental United States, from U.S. submarines. It isn't so much that they desire a nuclear war, although, as I presented in the previous Pulse live stream, it appears more and more likely that this may be triggered by events with respect to Israel and Hezbollah, as I outlined. But to stay focused on the Ukraine issue and Ukraine aid, the nuclear deterrence and the threat of using nukes, be they short range and intermediate range nuclear tipped missiles launched out of Ukraine, and now, as I'm going to share with you, possibly from Germany itself, with intermediate range nuclear tipped missiles. Again, these would be considered tactical nuclear devices. This appears to me to be more of a smokescreen, more of a cover story. Again, not speaking from a conspiratorial perspective, but more from an analytical perspective born out of logical observations of events and information, available information. So where I'm going with this is this. I read just 2 days ago that the sum total in U.S. dollar valuation, the sum total of the natural resources available in Ukraine, are over $24 trillion in value. I mentioned this in the previous Pulse video, that this is about greed. This is about taking control of natural resources. Typically, one of the most common reasons that wars break out is over resources. So what NATO is trying to do under this smokescreen of nuclear deterrence, and really, as I've presented, more of a nuclear offensive posture on the part of NATO, threatening Russia, the Russian Federation, with the use of nuclear devices against Russia, NATO reversing its original designed purpose, which was for the defense of NATO nations. Now it is an offensive organization, as I view it, threatening the use of nukes. Well, this is put out, I like to say, for public consumption. Even I'm contributing to that by way of the last Pulse video that I produced here. But nonetheless, we look at the causality, we look at the motivating factors for NATO, and it is greed. It is the control of natural resources in Ukraine. Over $24 trillion in valuation. So then we begin to look at Western venture capital, hedge funds, corporations that would want to exploit those natural resources. This is a pattern that has been followed by the United States and Western allies, Britain in particular, for centuries. This is imperialism, colonialism, and the like. Now, I want to keep today's presentation short, succinct, on point. So let's not get in the weeds in terms of discussing imperialism, but other than to say, let's just appreciate that that is the true backdrop to the motivating factors for NATO to exist and why they've taken on an offensive posture is because they aggressively want to take control of Ukraine's natural resources. Let's extend that line of thought into Russia. Most of you, I'm sure, are very much aware that in addition to Ukraine's natural resources, next door in Russia, because this all was the former Soviet Union, Ukraine and Russia itself, the Russian Republic, has vast natural resources as well. The greed extends, the aggression, the offensive posture extends into, literally, physically, into Russia. This is brinksmanship. Brinksmanship in terms of you're threatening the sovereignty and territorial integrity of a sovereign nation that is nuclear equipped. Certainly, at least to an equal level of the United States, if not by now surpassing. So this takes me to Germany, and I'd like to share the source material on this next item. This is from Stratfor, S-T-R-A-T-F-O-R, Stratfor. The United States and Germany, and this is dated 3 days ago, the United States and Germany agreed to the NATO summit, the United States and Germany agreed at the NATO summit to deploy American intermediate range missiles, most importantly, Tomahawk and eventually hypersonic missiles once they finish testing, to be deployed in Germany by 2026 for the first time since the Cold War. And this was reported by Reuters on July 11th. I mentioned this in my previous Pulse video, the Tomahawk missiles. The adaptation of these missiles from a naval ship-based launching platform to a ground-based platform, in particular mobile vehicle launching platforms for the Tomahawks. And Tomahawks, the Tomahawk D, I think it's the D or the E generation, is perfectly equipped to carry a tactical nuke or a multi-warhead, typically a single warhead, tactical nuke on a Tomahawk. These can reach from Germany as an intermediate range missile system to virtually anywhere in Russia. Okay? Certainly into the western and central portions. And of course, that means Moscow is well within range of these missiles being launched out of Germany. Now, I'm a veteran. I was stationed in West Germany 1977 through 1979, and I was intimately involved in nuclear warheads when I was there. Physical contact with the W-70 warheads. What I'm illustrating to you, just again, very briefly, is this. Based on my experience, based upon my present readings of information, I would expect that these Tomahawks would be available within the next few weeks, certainly within the time frame that I've described as a bookend of dates. Netanyahu, speaking before U.S. Congress on the 24th of this month, as one bookend, and the opposite being the November 5th elections here in the United States. Within that time frame, it would be my expectation that these Tomahawks will be fully capable of being deployed, launched, and equipped with tactical nukes in Germany prior to November 5th. It does not mean that the full complement that's available would be deployed and readied and available, but these can be fast-tracked. I'm not giving away any classified information. This is just my own background and understanding of some of these systems. So this is a direct threat. Putin has said for his part, and he actually said this back in 2021, with regard to the INF treaty that then President Trump had withdrawn the United States from participation in the treaty, which prohibited the manufacturing and deployment of intermediate range nuclear capable missile systems. Russia, on their part, chose not to begin manufacturing those. Now, Putin has publicly announced just a few days ago that they are actively gearing up the manufacturing of their own intermediate missiles that are nuclear capable. Again, I would assume that Russia, on their part, already have these missile systems, let's just say, warehoused. Again, not trying to be conspiratorial, but looking at it logically, I don't think that the Russian military, given their proven capabilities at this point, and they have many more that have not been deployed, it would be counter to the thinking of the Russian military to not already have manufactured, at least in small quantities, intermediate range. Missile deployment, and in particular tactical nuke deployment, is a multi-layered, multi-phased in terms of range and quantities, multi-layered deployment systems. So I would expect that they already have these missiles available. Germany, again, I spent 2 years there in the military. The German people are not, and then these are the reports coming out, they're not pleased with this. And this again segues over to my next topic, and this is Germany, Finland, Sweden, and of course, Norway. During the summit this week, there was a lot of hand clapping, congratulation going on the part, and even President Biden in his opening remarks was bragging about the fact that now Finland and Sweden are members of NATO. Well, if you look at this strategically, you have not only the threat, again, perceived from the Russian Federation perspective, you not only have the threat of Ukraine joining NATO and shared border with Russia, but now you have added Finland that has a shared border with Russia. And Finland, for its part, has been neutral. They've now violated that neutrality by joining NATO. Sweden has also. This, from the perspective of the Russian Federation, is again a threat. We know from the last 2 to 3 weeks, reports coming out of Finland, that 15 existing military bases, Finnish military bases, are now being made available to United States military forces. How would you, if you were in the shoes of the Russians, how would you view Finland? So this is not something to be celebrated. This is escalating the tensions between NATO and Russia. Again, the notion that NATO was a defensive organization, the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, has been turned completely 180 degrees around to where now it is offensive. And bringing in Sweden and Finland and continuing to attempt to bring in Ukraine is purely offensive. When you then look at it from the nuclear perspective of threats against the sovereignty and territorial integrity of the Russian Federation. I strive in these reports to maintain a balanced perspective as best I can. Obviously, I'm limited in my source of information, limited in my perspective because it is a U.S.-centric Western perspective, but objectively acknowledging that, I strive to look at it from the other perspective. I don't care to use the word enemy or adversary, but the other persons, the other states, the other entities' perspective, trying to establish a balanced understanding of the issues of the day. The German people, for their part, from information I've been exposed to, are not pleased because this literally puts them in the bullseye. I use that language of bullseye, you know, a target, the center of the target, because that is something that someone else used very recently. I'm not at liberty to repeat it here because I risk my channel being censored. There's a great deal that I have to restrain myself from saying on this channel, on this platform, having experienced the censorship, the closing of my previous Anthony Patch YouTube channel, necessitating the move to a private platform, a paywall protected platform. You can find that platform at anthonypatch.com. You can, if you choose to, subscribe to that platform by clicking on the subscribe tab at the top of my homepage at anthonypatch.com, where I don't face any censorship. It is our own live streaming platform, our own broadcasting platform. And I would encourage you to join us there because I am able to speak freely, and referencing the bullseye, I can give you the source of that statement, and I can give you that with respect to the events that occurred yesterday. This is not a teaser. I don't tease. I don't sensationalize. I'm simply stating factually that I am not at liberty to speak about certain things, and therefore I reference you over to our private platform for further information. Okay? Taken together, this statement of bullseye and Trump-proofing that statement coming openly out of NATO, as I read to you, is very concerning. I think from a Eurasian perspective, not just a Russian Federation, but a more of an Asian perspective, Far East, Middle Eastern even perspective, as we look at geopolitics, the rest of the world is looking at the United States, looking at NATO certainly, but looking at the United States and looking at the collective chaos. Europe has its issues that it's dealing with. I'll speak US centrically. Following the attempt on former President Donald Trump's life yesterday, and viewing the video of the attempt, the actions of the civilians, the populace, looking at the actions of the security forces, the Secret Service, the local police, it's very troubling. Because from, I would say, a world perspective, they would be asking the broad question of, why can't the United States protect its own candidates? We've seen attempts on other presidents and other candidates for office in other countries of recent times. But the United States tries to project a position, a perception of strength, military strength, economic strength, political through the diplomatic channels of the State Department, a position of strength in negotiations. And so it begs the question, why can you not, United States, protect the former president who's again running for the presidency? Why these obvious glaring failures on these videos, these news videos, on the part of securing a presidential candidate? I'm not going to go into an analysis of that here. I'm trying to keep this video very short, but I will do a very detailed breakdown this evening, 7 o'clock Eastern time, in our private live stream platform. I will base it upon my military training, my military experience. I will base it upon my experience in law enforcement and my experience for nearly 30 years as a paramedic in Oakland, California. So I have some exposure and training and briefing from the Secret Service itself and the FBI back in the 1990s that I'm going to share tonight. Not to be braggadocious or anything of that nature, that's not what I do. It is to provide, at least to the limit of what I have in experience and knowledge, some, I would say, deeper insights, deeper analysis of the security and the lack of security on the part of what transpired yesterday. But also to take it to the nuclear discussion once again tonight. And nuclear security will be a very large topic of discussion tonight. So I hope you will join us 7 o'clock Eastern time tonight. Our live streams typically run about 2 hours. It's very packed with a great deal of information, so most people find that the 2 hours go by very quickly. It's not like YouTube, where if you're more than 15 minutes, people go on to something else. We present this as a teaching, learning platform. I speak, as I am now, in very measured sentences and paragraphs. I do this because I am trying to present information in an informational, in a teaching modality, rather than just reporting the news, rather than trying to speak very quickly in an effort to fit in as much information into a brief video as is possible. I experience that when I watch videos like that and commentaries and presented as analyses that are too fast in their pacing, such that if the audience is not familiar with the topic and the terminology and the analysis itself, you quickly lose your audience. They're not gaining an education. They're not taking information away from the presentation. I am striving to present information that is useful, as I call it, in your everyday walk of life. Information that you can make your own, that you can then utilize as you see appropriate in your lives. So I speak in measured tones, measured paces, and it can take 2 hours to do that, to cover all of what we try to cover in 2 hours. We do this 3 times a week, Sunday night, Tuesday night, and Thursday night every week. We have some 850 live streams archived at anthonypatch.com since 2018, when we began live streaming. We also have Entangled Magazine, published every month. Number one in science and technology every single month on Amazon. Again, I'm not bragging. I'm saying we try to do a quality job here of conveying information through a variety of mechanisms. Everybody learns differently. Some will learn by listening, some by reading. So we try to provide those modalities to convey the information. And the printed magazine, which is also available in electronic form, provides a greater depth of source material, examination, and commentary than we are able to fit in even during the live streams we present. So we present 3, 4, that's 12 live streams now since a few days ago. I'm now adding, as events unfold, this platform of YouTube, providing a shorter presentation that we entitle Pulse, Taking the Pulse of Geopolitics. I want to thank you for your time here tonight. It is never our intent to promote fear or to sensationalize, but to be sober, clear-minded, and encourage critical thinking on your part as you consider the information that we present here on Pulse. Thank you, and we look forward to meeting you through our private platform at anthonypatch.com.